Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast. As always, presented by Last Word on Sports, and as per usual, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. I hope you guys had a fantastic week. Thank you for spending a part of it with us as we're recording here. Snow falling on the ground. It is officially the winter. Not really, you know, December 21st, but when the snow hits the ground, you start feeling it. So, let's jump right in. Let's not waste time with pleasantries. Let's start episode 15 by breaking down last week's games with this week's standout 7. But first, a brief moment of silence for the firing of Jerry Reese, one of the better GMs for the last decade. And then a very loud discussion about Ben McAdoo and how I can't really see him, at least for the short term, getting another position. He'll likely get hired. I shouldn't say he won't get another position. I don't see anyone hiring him at head coach. Not right now. I thought the Giants jumped to do so for some reason. Maybe it's because he worked well with Eli. That's likely what it was. But when you're an offensive-centered coach and your offense flounders and people begin to question your ability to be a leader of men, these aren't kids, these aren't boys, these are grown men getting paid to do this job, and you see people getting suspended. Star players. Janoris Jenkins is not a scrub. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is not a scrub. You see people getting suspended. Then you go after the franchise quarterback and you sit him down, which, once again, like I said, playing Davis Webb, it's whatever. I can understand the rationale, but he's in a pickle. And he had to see the writing on the wall. He knew he probably wasn't going to come back next year anyway. Although they might have given him a free pass, he did have a lot of injuries to deal with. There was some flux in the locker room, as I just said. If there's tension in the locker room, how much can you really blame the coach? It's kind of hard to tell, but we'll see. You know what I mean? I personally think it's going to be a few years before you hear his name again, unless he gets hired somewhere, and I don't think he has the charisma to be on CBS or Fox or any of those networks, but good luck to him. And it's a shame it worked out the way it was. And it's a shame it worked out the way it did. Obviously, not rooting for anyone to get fired, but you got to call it like it is in this business. And you're 2-10 with a team that was supposed to be a playoff contender, arguably could have won a playoff game last year. I know if you're just looking at box scores, they got blown out, but in the first half, they were in that game. Anyway, now that I've said my piece, and I promise we won't be talking about Ben McAdoo pretty much at all for the remainder of the season, unless news breaks and you have to do what you got to do. Let's get into the standout seven, and let's start with an article I saw from Yahoo Sports' own Jordan Schultz entitled "Packers Win Leaves Door Open for a Rodgers Comeback and Playoff Push." Well, if we look at the playoff picture right now, the Packers are 6-6, which means they're certainly not out of it. They're tied with the Cowboys and the Lions, but they are a game and a half behind the Falcons and a full 2 games behind the Panthers with 4 to play. Now, they play the Panthers next week, so they could make up that game. But the thing is, these are not walk-in-the-park games. They've got Cleveland this week, should be easy breezy. Although you never know. Cleveland's getting towards that end of the year where you don't want to be in the history book. They've got Cleveland, fine. Then they are in Carolina next Sunday, 1 p.m. game. That's followed up by a Saturday primetime game, so short rest, just a little bit, against the division-leading Minnesota Vikings, the team that right now is the one seed in the NFC. And they're tied with Philly. They're both 10-2. The Saints are 9-4. The Rams are 9-3. They got to win these games. They're not resting players. Not yet. Who knows? Maybe in 2 weeks, back-to-back wins for them, back-to-back losses for everyone else. It's possible. Highly unlikely. That being said, there's matchups between these teams. Either way. And then they finish on the road against Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions. So the thing is, as much as I'd love to see the narrative of Rodgers coming back for a playoff push, and he did it last year. You know, we'll run the table. Was that last year? It might have been the year before. You know what I'm referencing. The, oh, we'll run the table. They run the table, make the postseason, yada, yada, yada. It's a great story. You know, everybody's seen it a few times. I'd love to see it, because it would set up a phenomenal playoff matchup. If they're the sixth seed, they're taking on, as of right now, assuming the Panthers are the team to fall out of it because they face the Panthers and they'd have a tiebreaker and so on. Assuming that's the matchup, it's Aaron Rodgers going to California, where he went to college, where he resided, to take on the Rams in their first home playoff game at their new stadium. Now, that'd be pretty fun to watch. And then on the other side, if it holds as it is right now, you'd have Russell Wilson leading the Seahawks down into New Orleans to take on Drew Brees. And it would really set up this clash of the new age of quarterback against, I would say, the old guard. I don't think Rodgers is necessarily old guard. I think he's kind of a hybrid in the middle. I'd say Russell Wilson is also a hybrid, but he's closer to the modern mobile quarterback, obviously, than Rodgers. Rodgers can scramble, but his best trait is that in the pocket, pinpoint precision, solid arm. Anyway, that would set up a really intriguing playoff run. When you compare that to the AFC, where as of right now you have Flacco versus Mariota, which is kind of fun, you know, new age, top of the line guy versus debatable elite quarterback in the downswing. I think he's above average. He's a Super Bowl champion, so you can never take that from him. And then on the other side, it's very complicated because as of right now, you have a three-way tie atop the AFC West, but the leader is the Chiefs, so you'd have Chiefs-Jaguars, and you'd have one of those situations where the Jaguars have a better record, but they have to go on the road. That's real questionable. Anyway, just wanted to touch on that one for number one. Number two, and this will probably be two, three, and four, we're going to touch on some injuries. Number two, we just want to send thoughts and prayers and give a slight update on Ryan Shazier. Suffered a tragic injury in last week's Monday Night Football game between the Steelers and Bengals. The Steelers walked away with the victory, but this is a huge loss. Furthermore, it says here, according to Sports Illustrated, a neurologist who consults with the NFLPA, Anthony Alessi, went as far as to say, this is a much more severe situation on our hands than we thought, and Shazier may not play football again. He had limited movement in his lower extremities. Shazier, one of the most athletic linebackers in the NFL, if not the most, at the middle linebacker position. You have Anthony Barr on the outside and all those guys. Talented, smart guy, charismatic. In the few times you've seen him with media appearances, he's a classic Steeler, in my opinion. And it's a shame. It really is. The guy's only 25 years old. If he wants to try to come back, it's going to be a long road. I have no doubt that he can do it if his body is willing. But like I said, I just wanted to take this moment and give a brief update, let the world know that here at Last Word on Sports, our thoughts and prayers are with him in this trying time. No easy way to transition from that one, but we'll go cover football like we always do. Number three, Tyrod Taylor, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, who's been benched before, is questionable for this week's game with a knee injury. Now, this week, the Bills are going to be taking on the Indianapolis Colts at home. So this is a game that arguably they should be able to win, but Jacoby Brissett has been a curmudgeon, for the lack of a better term. He's made this team competitive. They almost took down Pittsburgh. They've stayed in a lot of games that they realistically shouldn't have been in. So we'll get to the pick'em portion later. If Taylor is unable to play and they have to throw Nathan Peterman out there, I don't know if I'm confident in picking them again. Remember, I picked them when they put Peterman in. I thought he'd give him a little bit of a jolt. I didn't know he would jolt the bolts all the way to the end zone and get benched at halftime. For number four, speaking of Bills injuries, it is official Shaq Lawson, defensive end and former linebacker, and wide receiver Jordan Matthews, who was supposed to be a big pickup in the offseason, or, you know, reasonably sized pickup when you trade Sammy Watkins. He was supposed to be the number one receiver. They are both on IR. They are done for the year. And Jordan Matthews hasn't really been able to put it together. He missed some preseason time. He missed some earlier season time. He's going to end the year with 25 catches for 282 yards. Not exactly what you're looking for, to say the least. He's not their leading receiver at receiver. Zay Jones has 9 more yards. Zay Jones has also been targeted 30 more times, and they have the same amount of catches. Shows you the amount of productivity this Bills offense has been having. Now, their rushing game has been pretty darn good. 850 yards for LeSean McCoy. He'll pass 1,000, but that's not going to blow you away. This isn't a 2,000-yard season. 2,100 passing yards, about 1,500 rushing yards for the team, really shows you that this team's strength, obviously, is defensively. And if Taylor can't go, Matthews isn't going to go. Kelvin Benjamin's still getting worked in. Kelvin Benjamin's a great wide receiver, but he's still getting worked into the system. And is he transcendent enough to actually lift this offense by himself? So far, he has 4 catches since the trade. Passing is just not what they do. It's just not. Team's averaging 175 passing yards a game. Taylor's also been sacked 34 times, which is hard to do as a mobile quarterback. It shows you where this offense has been. Number 5 of the standout 7 is something I didn't think I'd be saying until the postseason, but Philly is vulnerable. And we mentioned it before, with their loss to the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, they dropped out of the 1 seed for the first time in a long time. They were on a roll. They were killing it. Carson Wentz looked like the MVP. I would argue he probably still is my MVP. But they go out there to Seattle and lay a goose egg, to say the least. The rushing game, just over 100 yards, but no one runner really took over. Passing game, you throw for 350, but it doesn't result in a win. 4 snags for Alshon Jeffrey. Nelson Agholor, good to see him producing this year. I liked him at SC. I was really confused by his mediocre, to say the best, rookie season. Dropped a lot of passes. I think he's more talented than that. I think he knows he's more talented than that, and I'm glad to see him producing. But as far as this one goes, it just shows that this Eagles team, as dominant as they are, they're not going to run away with this NFC. And of course they're not. You know what I mean? This week they take on the Rams, and I'm not even certain they're going to win this game. The Rams have momentum, and the Rams are at home. Rams beat the Saints at home, and the Saints are a really good team. We'll get into the pick'em portion later. That's what we call a teaser in the business. Not really in the business, but that's what I've been told. Anyway, the point to come away with is the NFC playoff push and playoff matchups are going to be phenomenal. You know, I've bashed Seattle a little bit, and I've talked about openly how they're not the same team they used to be. They're not as dominant at home. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Nobody can keep up 7-1, 8-0 years at home constantly and consistently as you're in a state of flux. There's a little bit of turmoil in the locker room a few years ago. Sherman goes down this year. It's understandable. It really is. But they still got a great coach, Super Bowl champion quarterback with the heart of a lion, and they can mess with anybody on any given day. They really can. Number 6 of the standout 7 is kind of similar to number 1. We're going to talk about the Baltimore Ravens. And if we take a look at the season the Ravens have been having, it's not really astounding. They're 7-5. You look at their talent, you say, yeah, I can see that. They can be a 7-5 team. You got Flacco under center. Flacco's a decent quarterback, but 11 touchdowns, 11 picks. For the money he's commanding, that's not what you want. He's also averaging under 200 passing yards a game. That's hard to do. That being said, the team's 7-5, and as of right now, they are the 6th seed. They have a 1-game lead over the Chargers, Bills, and Raiders with, you know, if you want to play the odd money, Bengals, Dolphins, and Jets all at 5-7. See, the clutter in the NFC is all around the playoff picture. The clutter in the AFC is a little bit further back. So anyway, the Ravens have 4 games left. They're at 7-5, and the main thing I'm wondering is if this team can really compete come playoff time. Because they got 4 games left. They're in Pittsburgh tomorrow evening. They're in Cleveland the following week. It's Cleveland. They take on the Colts at home in a battle of teams that played in Baltimore. And then they end the year against the division rival Cincinnati Bengals. Now, it wouldn't shock me if they went 2-2 in this stretch and found a way into the playoffs. But it also wouldn't shock me if in the playoffs in the first round, they lost by 2 scores to the Titans. It just wouldn't. They're a decent team that is on the right side of good. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone would accuse them of being a bad team, obviously. They're not at 7-5 and not the way they've been playing. And they can hang around with these teams. They really can. And we saw that last week when they took on Detroit. They took down Detroit. 44-20. And I know Detroit's another one of those middle-of-the-pack squads, but I'm fairly high on them. I like Matthew Stafford. I like what their offense brings to the table. I think their defense is overrated. I know I sound like a broken record, but clearly it shows I might be somewhere in the right when you give up 44 points to the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, maybe your defense is a little bit overrated. Anyway, I think come playoff time, I want to see if something clicks for this Baltimore squad. Alex Collins is their leading rusher, 700 yards. Javorius Allen spelling him with for 400. Pretty good rushing game. Like I said, the passing game hasn't been tremendous, but when you look at their weapons, Mike Wallace, been there, done that. Jeremy Maclin, veteran receiver. Benjamin Watson, veteran tight end. They have some guys who have been there and done that, and they have some young guys who want to make a name for themselves on a big stage. Like I said, I could see them losing to Tennessee by two scores. I could see that game going down to the wire. Because John Harbaugh and Flacco have done this before. And Flacco, in the past, is almost Eli Manning-esque. He's been a different animal in the postseason. He really has. He got his money, and he earned it. He really did. You bring a Super Bowl title home, they give you a big contract. That's how it works. He doesn't make the rules. He just plays by them. That being said, can I see this Baltimore team beating New England? It would take a lot of that Joe Flacco magic to go into Foxborough one more time, especially against this New England team that is clicking right now. Can they beat Pittsburgh? I'm not going to spoil it because that game's going on this week. So we'll talk about that one when we talk about the matchups, which is coming soon. But first, we got one final point, number 7 in the standout 7. And I just wanted to touch on the whole Odell Beckham, Tom Brady discussion. I don't want to call it a controversy because I don't find it controversial. Tom's not going to give you any fodder, and Odell's just chattering on social media because he's hurt or because he likes to chatter on social media. Maybe he wants people to say his name. He hasn't heard it in a while. Who knows what the motivation is? Maybe he was just genuinely frustrated at the apparent double standard when it comes to players being vocal and being loud on the sideline. And I'm going to approach this from two angles. To be honest, I think he's making a good point. You see these star players, and it's not just in football, Tom Brady berating the officials. There's no flag. Tom Brady berating his coaches. There's no fine. Tom Brady berating his teammates. There's no schism in that locker room. What it comes down to, in my opinion, and this is my other point, is that is another one of those, he doesn't make the rules. He just plays by them. If he's allowed to do this, he'll do it. It's kind of similar to how Odell was allowed to go on a boat trip right before a playoff game. If he's allowed to do it, he'll do it. You know, there are people that will bash Tom Brady openly in the media and fans and probably players throughout the league that have done it in the past. I don't have to say probably, they have. They play in Pittsburgh, they play in Baltimore, they play in places like that where they just don't like him to begin with. So the antics get under your skin. That being said, if anyone is qualified for a double standard, it's Tom Brady. Tom Brady, 5-time Super Bowl champion, 4-time Super Bowl MVP, 7-time AFC champion, 12-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time second-team All-Pro, 2-time MVP, 2-time Offensive Player of the Year. Yeah, I think he's earned a double standard over the guy who made one catch, won a Rookie of the Year, and then was on the cover of Madden. I think he has a little bit more clout than you, my man. And here's the thing. I can't knock Odell for being a diva. There's a lot of divas in the league, and it always gets put on the receivers. But there are quarterbacks that are that way as well. And I think Brady is a good example. But when you're going to pick on somebody, you got to have a leg to stand on. And I don't think anyone's going to back him in this one. I don't think anyone will knock the fact that there is a double standard. But I think when a guy's a 5-time Super Bowl champion, guaranteed first ballot Hall of Famer, and people openly calling him the GOAT, I think he's earned a little bit of slack that you haven't. Like I said, big Odell fan, one of the most talented receivers I've ever seen play the game. I think while he makes a good point, he's a little bit off base on this one. I would say while he made a good point, he might be missing the point. Anyway, into everyone's favorite part of the show, my favorite part of the show, the pick'em portion. We're coming off a mediocre Jeff Fisher-like week 13, in which we went 9-7. So let's try and get back on track, you know, get our head in the game, fire Fisher, hire McVay, and pick some week 14 games, and hopefully do it well. We didn't do too well last week. And if you want to look through some of the games, just because we got some time to kill, you're not going anywhere, right? Anyway, you look at some of the games we missed. I picked the Chiefs to rebound against the Jets. It's not the worst pick in the world, but I thought it would be better. I picked Denver to outplay Jay Cutler. Apparently, Cutler was holding a grudge. Beat him down. I picked Chicago over the Niners. The Niners won at the buzzer. What do you want me to do about that one? I picked the Lions to go in and beat the mediocre Ravens. They decided to be the good Ravens that week. They'll probably be the mediocre Ravens this week. I picked Atlanta to beat the Vikings. Atlanta choked that one, in my opinion. They were right with them in that game. Couldn't finish when it mattered. Good game by the Vikings. Solid performance by the Falcons. There's no shame in losing to the one seed, but still. Picked the Packers, got that one right. Titans got that one right. Jags got that one right. Picked against the Browns, as always. Rams, as always. Picked against Geno Smith. It doesn't take, you know, rocket surgery. Yes, that was on purpose. No rocket surgery there. Picked the Saints to win at home. Saints got it done. The big one that got me was the Philly-Seattle game. That really, I know it's an upset and upsets happen, but that one knocked my socks off, I'm not going to lie. Anyway, let's try to not get our socks knocked off this week. Got my socks on for this pick'em portion. That's a masterful transition. 100%. Anyway, our first game of the week is Packers at Browns. And you're wondering, you know, how long is this going to last? How long are the Browns going to flirt with history? I'll say this. They have four games left. This one against the Packers. Then next week against the Ravens. Then they're in Chicago, Christmas Eve. I smell a Christmas present. Then they end against the Steelers. That game might be meaningless, so they could wind up winning two games. They might win three games. I highly doubt it. They probably won't win three games. I'd put money on that not happening, but if you told me to bet on them winning two, I couldn't argue against it. Rodgers is not going to be back this week, and as much as I like Hundley, he's still very raw, in my opinion. That being said, I'm still going to take him. Because it's Packers at Browns, and I'm taking the Packers. Our next game is an interdivisional matchup between the Lions and the Bucks in Tampa. I'm going to take the Lions in this one. You know, the Bucks, how many times can I say it? They're disappointing. Lions coming off a loss. They want to stay in the playoff push. But if you look at the Bucks have pretty much succumbed to mediocrity. They're 4-8. No chance of them staying in it. The Lions win here. The Lions stay in it. Who knows? A couple teams flounder. They might sneak in. They have just as good a chance of sneaking in as the Green Bay Packers. Give me Detroit. Our next matchup is going to be a good one. I hope. I would go as far as to say it's going to be a doozy. Divisional matchup. Three teams tied against the AFC West. Two of them playing tomorrow. Raiders at Chiefs. The Chiefs have collapsed. I have picked them to bounce back. They refuse to bounce back. And you start to wonder, how hard are they throwing this season away? Is it damned? I would go as far as to say they're still in it. Whoever loses this game might drop to two games back of the Ravens. They'll be 1.5 with a loss. But they're still in it. The Ravens don't have a cakewalk to the postseason. So when it comes down to this game, I'm going to go with Derek Carr and the Raiders. I like the Raiders at the beginning of the year. I think they're rounding into form. They got a solid victory over the Giants last week. It was a little too close for my comfort. But that's Raiders doing Raiders. These teams are not, the Raiders and Chiefs are not as dominant as they seemed. The Raiders, I'm talking about last season when they were borderline one seed and Derek Carr was an MVP candidate. I'm talking about the Chiefs when they started hot and Alex Smith was untouchable. He's been touched many times. It sounds wrong, but you understand what I mean. I'm not going to cut that out. You get it. You get it. Anyway, give me the Raiders to win this one and take at least a share of the division lead. We'll get into the Chargers game later. It's a 4 o'clock kick. Our next 1 o'clock kick is a matchup between teams that are in the NFC playoff hunt. Right now it is the 1 seed and the 6 seed. Vikings at Panthers. I'm going to be blunt. I just straight up think the Vikings are a better team. Cam Newton's a great player. I like Christian McCaffrey a lot. I didn't like the deal getting rid of Kelvin Benjamin. I didn't really think it made sense. Curtis Samuel's pretty good, but I don't think he's ready to be the go-to guy. I think he's kind of a flex kind of guy. Maybe a little Emmanuel Sanders action, you know, in the slot on the outside occasionally, and then slide him into the backfield occasionally even. Maybe Sanders isn't the best comparison, but I'm talking about talent-wise. I just think the Vikings win this one. They went in and beat the Falcons, and I'd say the Falcons are just as good as Carolina. Give me the Vikings to make another statement. Next, we got a battle of two backup quarterbacks. Shouldn't be saying that. The Texans are starting to back up. The 49ers are starting to back up, but he's their starter now. Jimmy G running out there for his second start in a row. He got a win last week, and I think this week he takes a loss. I'm taking the Texans in this one. I think the Texans have more offensive firepower, which in the grand scheme matters more, and I think Jimmy G's going to struggle a little bit against this defense on the road. They're not exactly the same quality as the Bears. Next, we have the aforementioned Colts-Bills game, and I alluded to it. I'm going to do it. I'm taking the Colts in this one. I'm not sure if Tyrod's going to play, but more so, I'm not sure if it's going to make a difference. If Peterman goes out there, he might be mediocre. He might be awful. If Tyrod goes out there, he might be mediocre. He might be awful. Obviously, Tyrod has a higher ceiling, higher upside, more talented quarterback. But I think Brissett can lead this Colts team into Buffalo with T.Y. Hilton and the gang and make some plays. Give me the Colts to pull off an upset. Air quotes around the upset. Next, we have a battle between two ferocious predators, the Bengal Tigers, home to the Chicago Bears. I'm going to take the Bengals in this one. I think the Bears are obviously still very early along in their rebuild, and I think while they've been competitive, they don't have the talent to finish these games. If there was any game they would be able to finish, I would argue that they could finish this game against the Bengals, but I think Cincinnati pulls it out in a close one, in a game that, with higher stakes, could be a game of the week, might I say? I think it'll be a little tense. Although, with Dalton on one side and the rookie Trubisky on the other side, it could be a turnover fest. I don't know. I think it'll be a good game, and I think the Bengals come out on top. Our final 1 o'clock kick is a return to the starting lineup for future Hall of Famer Eli Manning as the Cowboys head into New Jersey to take on the Giants. Now, it's snowing right now in Long Island, New York. So I'm not clear if it's going to be snowing tomorrow in New Jersey. If it does, I think it'll be a very fun game. Furthermore, I think it's important to note that the Cowboys are playing for something and the New York Giants are as well. Now, the Cowboys are trying to stay in this playoff hunt. Like I said, they're one of the trio of 6-6 teams. On the outside looking in, 2 games out, but never say never. 2 games out with 4 to go. Crazier things have happened. I think the Giants right now, with 4 games to go, are playing for pride. And that might sound dumb, but I think they're also playing for Steve Spagnuolo. He's their interim head coach. The defense likes him. The offensive guys haven't spoken ill of him. In fact, he probably won a majority of them over if they didn't like him all.